You're listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. For I Will Be With You. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible.
Welcome back to the For I Will Be With You podcast. My name is Baruch. I'm an alcoholic, and I'll be your host today. This is the 14th week of the year, from April 1st to April 7th, covering from Exodus 4:10 through Exodus 7:25. We're at the beginning of the book of Exodus, and Moses is, at this moment, in Exodus 4:10, hearing the word of God at the burning bush. And he is having a conversation with God, something that we can't do today. But Moses was a prophet, so he could really hear the word of God and talk back, which is very unusual. So God has said to him, to Moses, you need to go down and back into Egypt and tell Pharaoh to let my people go. Your job, your purpose in life now is to free the Israelites from hundreds of years of slavery under Pharaoh, who is the most powerful king in the world and controls a vast country and an army and all kinds of things. So in Exodus 4:10, Moses says, and Moses said unto the Lord, O Lord, I am not a man of words, neither heretofore nor since thou hast spoken unto thy servant. For I am slow of speech and of a slow tongue. And the Lord said unto him, Who hath made man's mouth, or who maketh a man dumb or deaf or seeing or blind? Is it not I, the Lord? So what Moses is saying to God, you know, hey, I can't do this. I don't speak well. And this is, there's some discussion about what this means. That did Moses actually have a stutter or a speech impediment, or maybe he just wasn't articulate or whatever. It doesn't really matter. What matters is that Moses believed that he wasn't capable of doing what he was being asked to do. And I'm not surprised, because I think that if someone told you, hey, go tell the President of the United States to, you know, do something important that he doesn't want to do, most of us would say, well, I can't do that. I don't speak well, right? But it's also because Moses is a man of great humility. He doesn't want to accept this assignment. He says, I'm not a man of words. But what God is saying is, it doesn't matter. Because I made you, and I made your mouth, and I made your speech. And he's saying in a way that Moses will be a vessel of God's word, a channel for God's will. And God is going to help Moses make things happen. And this should be an inspiration for us, in the sense that if we want to do something important, and we ask for God's help, then God can be with us and God can help us. God made us. God made our mouth, our minds. God can help us accomplish what seems to be impossible. And then the conversation continues, and in Exodus 6:30, Moses said to God, Behold, I have sealed lips. And how shall Pharaoh hearken unto me? He's saying, how will Pharaoh listen to me? I have sealed lips. Again, this idea that somehow he doesn't speak well, or he's, you know, not able to talk to people in a way that's convincing. And I relate this to a concept in recovery that comes up a lot, which is that when dealing with people in recovery, we sometimes have to say things that people don't want to hear, and or say things that we don't want to say. It's like, for an addict, it might be the fifth step, admitting our history, to our sponsors or making amends in the ninth step, getting up and saying, I'm sorry. That we probably wish we had sealed lips some of those times, right? Or if we're in Al-Anon, we might have to make statements or maybe not speak, which is also difficult in situations where we're in great pain. So how do we get the courage to say the things that need to be said? How can we have the strength to keep our mouth shut when that's the best thing to do? We may feel we have sealed lips. Yet, again, we have to understand that God gave us this power of speech. And when we speak God's will, God is with us. We are not alone. God helps our mouths and lips. And we will find the strength to say what we need. Moses goes down into Egypt and confronts Pharaoh and makes this demand that he let the Israelites go. And Pharaoh doesn't agree, as we've seen in the movie, right? With Yul Brynner playing Pharaoh. It says in Exodus 7:13, and Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he hearkened not unto them as the Lord had spoken. So this idea of Pharaoh's heart being hardened by God is a little confusing for some people, and it certainly doesn't have an easy explanation or a single satisfying explanation. But one way to look at it from our perspective is if Pharaoh is acting like an alcoholic. No matter how bad things get, he doesn't listen. His heart is hardened. And maybe one way to interpret this is that Pharaoh may have actually desired more hardening of his stance on this, and maybe God helped him out with that. But we don't know. But another interpretation is that of this concept is that God believed that Pharaoh deserved a certain amount of punishment for the evil that he had done to the Israelites, and therefore hardened his heart so that he would be punished by the plagues, to like almost guarantee that Pharaoh would receive the punishment that he deserved. But in a recovery sense, this is really, he's like an alcoholic. No matter how bad things get, his heart is hardened to change. He will not change his mind. And I think we've seen this in the rooms. We could call it the power of denial, right? How many divorces, arrests, wrecked cars, arguments, lost jobs, how many of these is it going to take before we admit that we have a problem? And it is always amazing in the rooms when you hear someone say, well, you know, I had a drinking problem for 30 years. I couldn't keep a job. I got divorced 3 times and I smashed a car and I killed somebody. And then somebody confronted me and said, you have a drinking problem. I said, really? I do? How could that be? Like, even after all of this, they're not even willing, they can't even conceive that maybe their drinking has something to do with what's going on in their life. So this verse should encourage us to maybe soften our hearts a little bit. Let's open ourselves up to hearing the truth. And in 7:13, Exodus 7:13, where it says Pharaoh's heart was hardened, we can also think of the plagues. The God brought 10 plagues against the Egyptians when each time Pharaoh refused to free the Israelites from slavery. Pharaoh was warned that a plague was coming, and then Pharaoh would say no, and then the plague would come. And so first, there were 10 plagues. The river Nile was turned to blood. Frogs came out of it, and then there were lice and death of cattle and hail and darkness and other, well-known plagues. And of course, culminating in the death of the firstborn sons of Egypt. So these plagues, you could look at them in a recovery perspective as the progressive destruction of addiction. And, addiction has the potential to destroy everything we care about, or at the very least destroy everything that we own, can certainly, addiction can certainly free yourself of possessions. We've seen that a lot. And the plagues actually also, one thing that's interesting to keep in mind is that the plagues really systematically destroyed Egypt as a country and Egyptian life. Everything that they valued, the river, farms, trees, animals, people, light, it really took away. These plagues weren't nuisances. They were, I mean, some of them were like nuisances, but they were mostly, they were really destroying the essence of Egyptian life. They were trying to show, God was trying to show the Egyptians that God was in control of their lives and everything they valued. And with our, in our case, you know, we go through this in addiction. You know, I think we've all been, a lot of us have been through, you know, selling our possessions to buy drugs, you know, losing our relationships, to leave us to our self-seeking. You know, addiction almost always leaves people alone and broke. You know, and if it doesn't, you're probably not ready to admit defeat and surrender. So addiction is a plague. It's like a plague on Egypt, and it's thrust on us by a power greater than us. And only a power greater than us can save us from it. We are powerless over it. And of course, the good news is there is one who is powerful enough to get us through the process of recovery and deliver us from the plague of Egypt, the plague of addiction. So in Exodus 7:18, the Bible describes the plague of blood. The river Nile is turned to blood. It says, and the fish that are in the river shall die, and the river shall become foul, and the Egyptians shall loathe to drink water from the river. This is describing the plague that's coming. It's not an accident that God chose the river Nile for the first plague, because Egypt was a nation of idol worshippers, a polytheistic society, if you will. And one of their biggest gods, one of their biggest idols, was the river itself. They worshipped the river. The river was, in ancient Egypt, the river was the source of the entire nation's life and wealth, because it would flood every year and fertilize the fields, and they would grow food from the river. And I believe this is still true in the country of Egypt today. The river really is the agricultural heart of the country. And so in ancient times, they worshipped the river. So it's not an accident. God is striking their sort of fake god, if you will, to show who's really God here. You think this river is a god, I can turn this river into blood just like that. So God is unleashing his fury at the false gods of the Egyptians. And this is an idea that can help us in recovery, because I think in addiction, we all create false gods of our own. Addiction is comparable to idol worship in that you elevate something worthless and make it the center of your life, and you end up, you know, worshiping or alternatively, because you're worshiping kind of the idols of the current moment, like money, sex, status, possessions, you can get yourself into resentments and envy and feelings that drive addiction. And this is a simple way to put this is maybe your priorities are out of order. You know, you're burning up because your friend gets a better car than you. You can't handle the resentment. And when you have 1,000 things like that going on in your life, the idea of getting drunk sounds pretty appealing. You know, let's just get drunk because then I won't have to worry about it anymore. That's what happens when you elevate false gods in your life. You're worshiping the idols of the current era. And it's unhealthy. And this is what we can learn from this idea that God strikes the Nile. He strikes down the idols. God will overpower these meaningless things in our lives and deliver us into true belief and true serenity. And now, here's an interesting thing. In Exodus 7:19, it says, and the Lord said unto Moses, say unto Aaron, Aaron is Moses' brother, take thy rod and stretch out thy hand over the waters of Egypt, over their rivers, over their streams, and over their pools, and over all the ponds of water, that they may become blood. And there shall be blood throughout all the land of Egypt, both in vessels of wood and vessels of stone." So what's happening is, it wasn't just the river that turned into blood. Every drop of water that Egyptians had turned to blood. So if they had like a bottle of water on the table, it would turn to blood. Now, the question is, why doesn't Moses get the honor of initiating this plague? Why does Aaron, Moses' brother, why does he do it? Now, here's an answer. This interesting interpretation comes from the commentators. It's that Moses had some gratitude to the river. Why? Because the river saved Moses' life. If he hadn't been floated down the river as a baby in that little basket, what the Bible calls an ark, he wouldn't be alive. So, Moses didn't want to, and God didn't want to put Moses in that position of, you know, of punishing this river that had saved his life. And this is a this seems like a little strange idea, but I think you can learn out something important from it, from recovery, which is Moses is showing us that he has gratitude to an inanimate object for saving his life. So if Moses can have gratitude to an inanimate object, and an inanimate object that is part of a system that he hates, then how much more so should we have gratitude towards people and respect towards people in our lives? And we should try to avoid hurting people who've helped us in the past. And, you know, the people who've helped us in the past are often the people we hurt the most in addiction. You know, parents, relatives, teachers, clergy. These are the people who are close to us. They might have been trying to help us. And we've lashed out at them the worst because they're actually near us. So we need to make amends and take care not to hurt them going forward. And Exodus 7:25 says, "And 7 days were fulfilled. After that, the Lord had smitten the river." So the Torah says that the plague lasted 7 days. But the commentators' opinion is that the plague actually took a month, in that there were 3 weeks of warning. So Moses and Aaron warned Pharaoh for 3 weeks, gave him a chance to change his mind, and then when Pharaoh said no, then there would be a week of plague, a week of blood in the river, a week of lice, a week of boils, a week of frogs, and so forth. And I think that if you've ever been on a bender or a run or whatever you want to call it in addiction, or seen a loved one go through it, this may seem like a pretty familiar story. It's not, you know, people don't just get up and, you know, out of nowhere, you know, start going on a binge. There's usually a period of tension leading up to it. This is especially true in relapse. People who are not doing recovery will often relapse, but the relapse doesn't just happen. Someone doesn't wake up one day after, you know, 3 months of sobriety and walk into a bar. There's usually a warm lead up to it. Tension, arguments, resentments, other things that are going on, ignoring warnings of consequences. And then later you have the plague, there's the actual, and then you have the aftermath, you know, self-blame, contrition, blaming others, pledges never to do it again. The process repeats itself, and destruction follows in its wake. And it's really tragic in a way, like even though Pharaoh and the Egyptians deserved what they got, you also feel some sympathy for them. It's like, can't they figure this out? And I think for us, there's an idea that I've learned in recovery, which is you need to think the drink through. If you can think it through, where you're going to be after that drink, because you know it's not going to be one drink, right? It's not going to be one drink. It's going to be 50 drinks. And for some people, they won't even know. They know they won't remember. I mean, this, and I personally haven't had this experience, but where there are, unfortunately, there's people who have blackout drinking, and, you know, they pick up a drink, they could come out of it a week later. They could be in a different city. They have no idea where they've been or what they've done. And you know, and they may not even be alive after a week, right? So if they could think it through, maybe they wouldn't pick it up. But that's the message here, which is you have to take the opportunity to think it through. You're usually given some warnings and given an opportunity to stop before you start. And that is the challenge.
You've been listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible. www.foriwillbewithyou.com